The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Annie, welcome to the Wire to Wire podcast. It's great to have you on.
Yusuf, thanks for having me on.
So for the audience at home, today's guest is Annie Margarita Yang, and she is a game changer for millennials that are tired of running on a never-ending financial treadmill. So not only is she a money-saving guru with over 1 million YouTube views, but she's also written Amazon bestsellers like The 5-Day Job Search and 1001 Ways to Save Money. So Annie, I gave a brief description of you, but if you want to go into more detail and tell the audience more about yourself and what it is that you do.
Yeah, so what I do is I basically help people land jobs quickly because the average person, apparently, they take 6 months to get a job offer. And, you know, I think it's very much doable because I'm someone who didn't go straight to college. I worked a whole string of minimum wage jobs in high school. I did get an online bachelor's degree in communication, but I came out and I was working at Domino's on minimum wage again, right? So everyone was pressuring me to believe, like, you need this to get ahead in your career, but it simply wasn't the case. I came out making $8 an hour. And so when my husband and I, we moved from Texas to Boston, I was like, you know what? We have a new life here in Boston. Nobody knows me. I don't have any network or connections here. So I can pretty much like make my own identity. I can be a new person. I can change if I really wanted to. And at the time, I was really good at personal finances because we make so little money. To really make our dollar stretch, we have to watch every single penny. So I was like, if I can do this for myself, watching every single penny so that we never get ripped off, then maybe I can do this for business. It's just the same thing, but on a larger scale. So I started applying to accounting jobs without any accounting degree. And after 7 days, I got an offer. So, you know, people always say it says accounting degree required on the listing, but wasn't necessarily the case. I got the job, right? And then in the next job search after that, I got an offer in only 6 days. And then in my job search 1 year later, I got an offer in only 5 days. So, you know, you think you do it once, okay, it's luck. But if you can do that 3 times in a row, there must be some skill there.
Yeah. And is this something that you highlight in your book, The 5-Day Job Search?
Yeah, actually like the foundation for the book, because I want people to know, you know, if I did it and it's possible for me, then why not you? Why is it not possible for you as well?
So in your book, The 5-Day Job Search, if you want to tell the audience about what it is about and what is the valuable information that they can gather from actually taking the time to read it.
This is really about, here's the thing. So a lot of people are really good at what they do. They're very competent, you know, they have the skills, they have the experience, they have the degree. But why is it that like they always get passed over and then someone else who somehow on paper has like less qualifications than them are the ones that end up getting hired or get paid more? They don't understand why, right? And it's really frustrating. And one of the things that is like really, really important in this book that I highlight a lot is about positioning yourself as an industry expert. So the problem is people don't know how to sell themselves. And even if they want to learn how to sell themselves, just the mere fact of saying the word sell myself, it's kind of like cringy. Like it's like sell myself. It's like slimy. Do I have to boast or brag about myself? I want to be humble. I thought humility was like, you know, something that's really important in our society. And so it's, this is more about how to like package yourself. Like if you think of yourself as like, we're all given God-given gifts and talents. And the reason it's called the word gift is because it's meant to be given away to other people, right? So that's your gift, the things that you can do that you're capable of. So think of you as a gift, then we got to put you in some pretty wrapping paper, maybe a bow as well, right? So we're just wrapping you up nice so that you're more attractive to employers in the job market.
Yeah, that's interesting what you mentioned there, because I do find that a lot of people, it is a struggle. It's a skill that you have to develop, knowing how to, I guess, talk about yourself without coming off like you're bragging or trying to flex on them, but rather just showcasing what it is that you do. And I know at, you know, certain points in my life, it's something that I kind of struggled with, because I wasn't trying to make it seem like I'm better than this person, I'm doing more. But at the same time, I just want to show and tell what I can do, right? So I think it's a skill that people need to develop. But on the spirit of that topic, like you mentioned earlier, when you were putting together this book, you were sharing some of your personal experiences and what worked for you that you're now sharing with others. But what were some of the early struggles and the mistakes that you made in your journey before you became the person that you are today?
I think some of the struggles and mistakes is like, I was really scared. I was like always on the fence. People think I'm always so courageous and I'm always like, okay, let's trail on ahead kind of thing. Like when I want to do something, and I do have that attitude, I admit. But like, for example, like there were several years when I wanted to make a YouTube channel. Like I growing up as a teenager, watching people like Kev Jumba, Michelle Phan, you know, like the original OG, like YouTubers that became really popular on the platform. I was like, I want to do that, right? But like, I never did it. You know, I had even like bought some equipment, like lighting equipment, camera equipment and stuff like that. Still never did it. My husband, after being married to him for 4 years, he was just like, when are you gonna do it? And I was like, you know, it wasn't until like I got really upset. So I take action when I'm upset. It gets to, I have to be or upset or something before I finally get off my butt and do something big. And what made me upset was like, I saw a YouTuber who was giving financial advice about her student loans. She owed like $100,000 in student loan debt, and she was complaining that it took her several years to pay, and she still hasn't paid it off yet. She has $100,000 left, right? And then I was like, what? Like halfway through the video, she said she was making 10 to 12 grand a month. And then I was like, you can't pay off your student loan debt when you make 10 to 12 grand a month? Really? Like, what are you spending your money on? And then she, later in that same video, she revealed that she was spending like $1,000 on airplane tickets, another $1,000 on makeup. And then I was like, oh my goodness, you know? But like, people were listening to her. They were in the comments engaging with her, saying that she was so hot. And then I was like, what does that have anything to do with what she's talking about? And so when I saw that, I finally got off my butt. I started making a YouTube channel. I wish I had done it sooner, actually. That was my biggest mistake, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting story you shared about the YouTuber. So in your experience, right, from interacting with people and hearing different stories, do you think the primary issue that people face is a spending problem or is it a earning problem?
I think it's both. So I had this stupid limiting belief, right? Because I didn't go straight to college after high school. My guidance counselor had instilled in my brain every week telling me that I will always be a failure and I will never make more than a McDonald's worker. So I was like, oh, if I'm like doomed to never make more than like $8 an hour, $10 an hour, then that's my fate. I might as well be really good at saving money. But then like there came a time right around the same time when I made the YouTube channel as well. I was like, you know, I work my butt off to save. I watch every penny, we budget, like anything that we want, we have to save for. And then I came to realize, I was like, but our purchasing power was getting eaten away by inflation. Like I noticed that the landlord, every time at lease renewal, they would raise the rent by $100 a month. I was like, but my employer is not like freely giving me $100 a month more in my paycheck, right? The Comcast bill, so internet, $10 goes up, electricity, the rate goes up. So while my usage is the same, they increase the rate. Same apply for gas and water. And then I was like, so these are like the bare necessities, right? I could say no to spending on like other things, but the bare necessities to live, like it just kept going up and up and up. And then I soon realized, I was like, I could save all I want, but I'll soon have nothing left to save if this keeps going at the rate it's going. So you have to focus on both earning money and saving money as well. It's a two-pronged problem.
And since we're on the topic of discussing finances, right? Like, so you mentioned a lot about people developing systems that they can implement into creating financial freedom for themselves, but doing it in a practical way, right? So if you can share maybe an example of a system that could be implemented by people to help them be on the path towards achieving that goal.
One of the, very basic systems is the fact that the first thing you do when your pay direct deposited into your bank account, on Fridays, 10% of that at a minimum should be automatically transferred into a savings account. Because like if you see the balance in your checking account, then you're just like, oh, that's money for me to spend. And then you think of your savings as something that's like left over after everything you spend. But actually, savings is something that you have to do deliberately. It's something you actually have to set aside and say, I'm never going to touch that. Right. So that's just one form of the system. Another form of the system is like if you have trouble with credit card debt, like you cannot help yourself from spending money. And then it turns out that the amount of money that you spend on your credit card consistently ends up being much more than what you even bring in as your paycheck. Right. One of the things that I used to do back then, just to make sure my husband and I were on the same page in terms of our spending habits, is every time money was spent on the credit card, at the end of the day, I would move cash from one envelope into the a credit card payment envelope. So that way, by the time the credit card payment was due, I'm like, well, we've already pulled it from this envelope into the credit card payment envelope, just to be able to see how much money we have left in other things for budgeting purchases, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah. So I think, yeah, that's very practical. I mean, it's something that people can start doing right away, right? But one thing I do find is that as, millennials, is that we were, kind of sold the dream of, post-secondary and then furthering your education, which I think consequently resulted in many people accruing, student debt. And that has kind of created a challenge for people to get ahead financially. So I have a two-part question for you. So number one is, and you kind of touched on this earlier, so you don't probably have to get into too much detail with this, but how can millennials that are currently dealing with student loan debt, how can they combat that problem to be in position to pay it off? And for the second part of the question is for an upcoming generation now, how can they avoid falling into that same cycle that the earlier ones did?
Well, for millennials that already have the student loan debt, I mean, the best way is you need to pay it off quickly because the interest on it accrues. So if you don't make payments, or if your payment, which the government is now encouraging, oh, you can't afford to pay, then pay what you earn. Pay only 10% of your income, pay only 15% of your income, which oftentimes is less than the minimum payment it would be. And then the interest accrues on the interest accrues on the interest, which is why the balance just balloons up. Right. So I like to think of it like this. You will not have work-life balance. Millennials, they like to prioritize, oh, I need my work-life balance. You can't always like work to live, right? Or live to work, that kind of thing. But if you really want to have a secure future for yourself, a financial future where you can buy anything you want, do anything you want, you have to put in the groundwork now, which is boring, which is it's not satisfying at all. You have to work, right? So you either have to get a better paying job, which in my book, I describe how I went from making $45,000 to making $80,000 in just one jump in your next job search. So it's possible that moving ahead in your career, you can command more income as well in your negotiations. But the other thing is, why not get a second part-time job in addition to your full-time job? Like, what exactly are you doing after work, after your 9 to 5, right? Or if you work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, what can you do on the weekend? Can you get a part-time job for the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, no days off? I mean, these are the people who actually get ahead financially, because I like to think of it like this. From 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., I work to pay the bills. And then from 5 p.m. to 9 a.m., I work to build my fortune. That's how I like to think of it. You know, the 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. is the bare minimum. You know, it's not like, okay, I've done what I needed to do. No, I think of that as just the bare minimum. There was a time in my life when I was working at Domino's Pizza. Like, I'm not saying this to be condescending or to say you guys are lazy if you don't work all day, every day, right? But like, you do what needs to be done to get ahead until you don't have to, right? Like, the time in my life when I was working at Domino's Pizza, after I graduated with a college degree, I worked 5 part-time jobs, never took a day off. I was exhausted. I did this for 10 months straight. There were actually some days I was so exhausted, I overslept. I didn't hear my alarm, and I had to tell my employer, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry." Like, that's how bad it was, right? But 5 part-time jobs. Like, there were some days I woke up to, I was a substitute teacher as well in one of those jobs. So I would have to wake up, be at the school at 8 a.m., right? And then I would do a half day until 12 p.m. Then I would go from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. working a bookkeeping job. And then I would eat a little bit. And then from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., I would do security for basketball and baseball games. And then at 10 p.m., I would eat my dinner.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Like, those were the days that I had to work. It was exhausting.
Yeah, but I mean, it's exhausting, but at the same time, you know, that's what, you know, the 20s is kind of all about, is that you have to kind of put your head down and work, right? Whether,
Yes.
like, that's what the 20s really is about.
Your 20s set the foundation for the rest of your career. It's the
Agreed.
foundation.
And then, you know, as you like progress into your 30s, maybe early 30s, you can kind of wind down a little bit on having to work so much because you did a lot in your 20s. But then as you get older, you don't have to nearly work to that degree. Like, you know, life is work at the end of the day, but you can dictate the pace of your work as you get older if you really, you know, sacrifice and utilize your time in your 20s.
That's right. Like, I remember I was complaining so much when I first started working at Domino's Pizza. I was complaining to my Indian friend. Her father was in town and staying with her at the moment when I was complaining as well. So he was listening in on the conversation, and he was like, "Annie, you have to listen," because he's like in his 60s, right? He was like, "You have to think of work like a quota. Like, people who don't work a lot now, they're gonna have to work a lot in their 60s." When their back hurts, when their knee hurts, when they need a hip replacement, like, they make up for that lack of work in their early years by having to work in their 60s or 70s when they really don't want to work, right? And so you have to meet this quota. The question is, when do you want to meet this quota? Do you want to like play now and work later, or do you want to work now and play later? You get to control that, but you don't get to control the fact that you have to meet a quota. Think of it like that.
Yeah, and I think that's a personal decision everyone will have to make for themselves. But if anyone asked me for my opinion, I would say just sacrifice in the short term to benefit in the long run. But I want to pivot our conversation a little bit more on the career side of things, right? So when we hear the term branding, we mostly look at it from a business or entrepreneurial lens, rather than from a job seeking lens. So in this current marketplace right now, right, referring to the job market, how can job seekers go about, building a personal brand first and then eventually using it as leverage?
Job seekers can think of building their personal brand as simply sharing their expertise. Everyone already has a personal brand, they just don't know it yet. So you have to understand, if you pick up like any branding book on Amazon, doesn't have to be personal branding, could be corporate branding. They always say over and over again, what is branding? Branding isn't something that you create. Branding is other people's perception of you, and perception is reality. So what other people think of you, opinions, their judgments, their evaluations of you is your brand. So you don't get to control your brand, you get to curate your brand in terms of like what you put out, which will affect other people's opinions of you. Right? So even if you don't have any social media profiles, like you don't have a Facebook, a Twitter, a TikTok, nothing, then your personal brand is the I'm still stuck in 2005 brand. If you have those, social media profiles and you do post things, but you post random stuff like this is what I ate for dinner last night, then this is what I eat brand, Or like if you're part of like a pyramid scheme and you keep selling Amway products and trying to recruit your downline. Right, then this is the like I'm eternally part of a pyramid scheme brand. Everyone already has a brand. The question is, can you make the brand into one where it's like, okay, I'm an expert, a leading expert in my industry, and I know how to solve your problem. People are going to call me all the time to give me offers.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, so what's an example, I guess, for a job seeker? What's an example of them being able to, like, I guess, showcase a personal brand?
And one example is like, think of your headshot. Your headshot is the first thing people see of you when they get on your profile. Your headshot and your name, actually. People overlook this. And I personally, I used to be like this as well, because I was like, well, what should be important is on what's on the inside, right? I was born looking the way I look. I cannot change the way I look. So people shouldn't be judging me based on how attractive I am. But I came to realize that I can work on myself as much as I want and do self-improvement, but before I open my mouth, they're going to judge me, right? Before I even speak a single word. So I ended up having to place a lot more money and time into my appearance, learning how to dress better and everything. But you don't have to do that now. But the one thing you can do is you can get a nice looking headshot to start. Using the same nice looking headshot all across your various social media profiles as well, so that people recognize that you are you. If you use a different one, I won't be able to tell you're the same person that I found on Facebook, right? Getting that professional headshot though is expensive. It costs between $300 to $600. It's something I had to save up for 4 months before I could finally spend the money. It's well worth it though if you can afford it. But I actually did research on different AI headshot generators. I tested out 20 of them with my own money. I uploaded selfies of myself and pictures of myself, the same ones across all 20. And then I judged the results out of all of them. And the best one that I found was called DreamWave AI. The most expensive package they have is $99. And I think they gave me 800 possible photos to choose from. And a lot of them actually resembled me. Like I would have thought like, oh yeah, that does look like me. And someone else would have fallen for it too as well. So it looked realistic. They looked professional. And they resemble you a lot. So you only need to pick one out of the 800. So I think it's a good option for someone who cannot afford the professional headshot.
Yeah, and plus too, many people nowadays they have smartphones, right? So I mean, these are powerful cameras. So it's just about being, I guess, a little bit of create. There's a little creativity and resourcefulness that kind of comes into it. But you mentioned AI and you mentioned that tool. So with the emergence of AI and a constantly changing job marketplace, like what are some things that people can do to stay ahead? To stay ahead in order to, remain economically viable.
Well, one of the things you can do is you need to spend an hour per day educating yourself in whatever you are lacking. If there is a gap in competency, you need to fill the gap. The worst time to improve your skills is when you need a job, is when you're actually looking for your next job, or when you're unemployed or about to be, you just got the layoff notice, right? The best time to do it is to be more proactive. Like right now, if you're still financially secure and you have the funds, you should be educating yourself. So what I like to recommend people is, like, think of the job that you want next. What's the title that you want? That is like the next step up in terms of the ladder normally. Like, let's say if you were a staff accountant, then the next one up is senior staff accountant, right? If that makes sense. And then so search that up, that title up, and then type in job listing into Google, open up the various job listings, and then you look at all the qualifications that are needed and what the jobs are looking for, like what you need to do for those jobs. And you should be able to say, well, I don't know how to do this or that or this. Let me write this down on a piece of paper. Like look at maybe 10 listings. And then like, if you see something that's over and over and over again, that's mentioned that you're lacking, that you don't know how to do, now's the time to learn how to do it. Take a course on Udemy for like $12.99, you know, and learn how to do it. So that way, by the time it's time for the interview, you're like, yeah, I do know how to do it. I actually took a course on that. That's the best way.
Yeah, I can agree with that, proactivity. And I do think, you know, gone are the times where, you know, someone would get a job really young and then they would just stay in that role or stay with that one company up until retirement. I think so much has changed. And I think, you know, people need to now adapt to that new marketplace.
Yeah, that's definitely true. If you do not adapt your skills to the new marketplace, then all of the knowledge that you've learned has, in the last 10 years ago, has depreciated. Like, can you imagine people who studied marketing in college 10 years ago? Like, how applicable is that to today? Did they learn about TikTok marketing 10 years ago?
No.
or like Instagram or YouTube marketing? Like, they didn't learn any of that 10 years ago. So whatever you graduated with is totally outdated and obsolete.
It's true. And like, even with these platforms, the algorithm is always changing too. So even if you recently studied it, that information may not even fully equip you 2 years from now, because something may change or there may be a new platform that comes, right? So it's a never-ending thing. But we are reaching the final segment of this show, which is called Open Floor. So it's essentially uninterrupted time where you can communicate or share anything that you want to with the audience. So it's up to you now. The floor is yours. Anything that you'd like to say, you can go ahead.
Yeah, the main thing I really want to leave people with in this open floor is to go big or go home. I used to be very scared. When I got a rejection from a bank, I applied for a bank at the same time when I was like working at Domino's Pizza. I applied to 8 and all 8 rejected me. And I remember I was like crying about it to my husband for like 48 hours. And he's like, are you done crying now? And I was like, no, you know, and I used to take rejection like really personally. And I had a very thin skin. But I've come to realize the way to deal with it is to just simply not take it personally. Think of the times when you've rejected someone else, when somebody came up to you and asked you, would you like some blah, 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 blah. And you're just like, no. And it wasn't personal. You just did, like, if I came up to you and asked, do you want some chocolate cake? And you say, no, like, it's not personal. I could come back with, well, would you like some apple pie? Yeah, maybe you'd be interested in some apple pie. So think of it as like, people aren't rejecting you as a person. They're just rejecting the thing that you're offering, right? If you were offering chocolate cake and they said no, you could always offer grapes or apple pie, something different that they might like. And the way to also deal with it is to think of the concept of like, go big or go home. So how do I win book awards for my new book, The 5-Day Job Search, right? I don't know which company is going to give me the award. So the only way is to go big or go home. I ended up applying to every single book award out there. I applied to about 50 of them. And then I'm just like waiting for the results to come back. Some of them have already come back. I've won 3 book awards, got finalist in 2, and then I got shortlisted in 1, right? I'm still waiting for the rest to come back. But like, those are very good results. I mean, even just winning one allows me to say I'm an award-winning author. So this is the concept of go big or go home. Apply for everything. So in the five-day job search, I talk about applying to 50 jobs a day. And the most common reaction I get from people is like, oh my gosh, Annie, 50 jobs a day? They freak out because they think I'm asking for a lot, right? And they tell me that they apply to only maybe like one job a day or five jobs a day, and that that takes a big toll on them mentally already. And then I'm just like, but why? It doesn't have to be the case. You can write one highly targeted resume for the title that you're going after. So don't make a new resume for every job that you're applying for, but just one resume that will fit for pretty much every job that's within the same title and industry. And then just use the easy apply button on Indeed, ZipRecruiter, LinkedIn, right? So that takes only 1 minute. You don't even read the listing, just read the title. Oh, it has a title, apply, 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 1 minute each. And that's about 1 hour per day. You don't have 1 hour per day to apply for jobs. I mean, if you do this for 7 days, you'll have applied to 350 jobs and you'll get multiple phone calls for interviews and you will have multiple interviews lined up and you get to pick and choose which ones you want when you get an offer, right? Versus you spread that out 300, let's say someone who's applying to 1 to 5 jobs a day, but they do it over the course of 6 months. So you're basically doing what I'm doing, but you're just spreading out that same work over 6 months, 350 jobs over 6 months. But my recommendation and strategy is actually better, because if you spread yours out, you might miss out. You know, if you get an offer, let's say on September 1st, and that offer expires September 15, but you have another interview lined up for September 14, then you're always going to wonder, gee, should I have turned down the offer from the September 1st one and then like wished for the September 14th one to have worked out? You'll always wonder, right? But if you actually shortened it like the way I recommend, you can actually line up all of the interviews to be in the same week. So that way, when they come back, you have that leverage instead of like waiting and waiting and wondering, what if, right? So that's what I would like to leave people with, go big or go home.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good one. And, you know, I like that you use the phrase go big or go home, because that kind of ties into the theme of this podcast, really, right? It's a sports reference. Wire to Wire is a sports reference. So I kind of like that you chose that phrasing. But how can people, you know, find you and how can they connect with you?
The best way to find me is by visiting www.annieyangfinancial.com. The 5-day job search audiobook is actually free. You can download it on annieyangfinancial.com. At the top of the website, there's a link that's called audiobook. So click on that link and then put in your name, your address to download the free book. And then the other way to connect with me is I'm big on YouTube. You know, I have 18,300 subscribers, but I've been shadow banned by YouTube, and I've hit the 18,300 ceiling so many times. I think 5 times at this point I've hit that ceiling, and then all of a sudden I lose 20 subscribers, 30 subscribers. Just yesterday I woke up, you know, because I had hit the 18,300 ceiling again, and I lost another 10. So I don't know what's going on, but it's not possible for me to grow on YouTube anymore despite making more videos, and people love my content. So 2024, my focus will be on TikTok, where they're not trying to censor me or shadow ban me. So follow me on TikTok. It's Annie Yang Financial.
Yeah, these, like we were talking earlier, these platforms, the algorithm is always changing. And even the slightest things can get someone shadow banned. So I don't, like, it's even tough to keep up with what the criteria is. But that's probably another episode in and of itself. But I'll put definitely all the links to all that stuff will be in the description, so people will be able to find it. But, you know, it was great having you on the show. You brought a lot of valuable information that I think people can actually take and apply. So I do want to thank you for your time and being part of the show.
Yusuf, thanks for having me on Wire to Wire.
Of course. Until next time, take care. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!